Hi. I've decided to make another video of personal thoughts. In my last one, I expressed some trepidation about doing it, just because I don't like the general impact of turning everything into a video instead of text, but I've decided to at least make a few more when I think the thoughts warrant it. And the first one was mostly an experiment. I guess you could call it a kind of mea culpa of saying, hey, sorry to shit up the internet with more videos that could have been text before I do it. So I'm going to upload a text version of this as well, eventually. But in this video, I have some thoughts about religion and what it means to me. It's a topic I think a lot about these days. I should start then by explaining my own background here. What religion am I? I would say that today, if there was any one label I could give myself spiritually, it's that I'm a Buddhist. I say this because I go to a Zen temple once a week or so and meditate according to Zen precepts a fair amount of the time, outside of my time at the temple. I used to live in Japan, and when I lived there, I went to a local shrine fairly often. But I don't live there anymore, so I would have called myself a Shintoist if I lived there, but at the most I think I can say now is I'm a Shintoist in exile, because I don't think it's very feasible to practice Shinto outside of Japan most of the time. It's a very land-based religion, but it's about physical spaces and the specific nature, landscape, kind of cultural environment of Japan. So I say that I'm a Buddhist because I can't be a Shintoist here. If I lived in Japan again, I would be a Shintoist. But you might notice that when I explain why I'm a Buddhist, I never made any reference to my beliefs. I never said that I'm a Buddhist because I believe any particular doctrine or another, even in the central teachings of Buddha. That's not because I don't believe in any of these, per se. I'm agnostic about the concept of reincarnation, but most other teachings of the Buddha make a good deal of sense to me. I believe in karma, in the very practical sense that we live in a world of causes and effects. I also believe in a great degree to Buddhist ethical teachings like ahimsa, or nonviolence, and metaphysical ones like shunyata, or emptiness of phenomena. But that's not why I consider myself a Buddhist, primarily. I consider myself one before anything because of what I do. It's less about what's internal and more about what's external for me. And externally, I go to a Buddhist temple, I meditate, I'm surrounded by Buddhist practitioners. And I think we need to recover this idea of religion being more of an external than an internal thing. And I'll explain this a little bit by looking at Shinto in Japan. Shinto is the name of the indigenous spiritual practice of Japan, and I think it's one of the purest forms of spiritual practice on the planet. But in truth, I think it's something like one particular manifestation of a universal spiritual practice. That's because I think it gives us a much clearer picture of what this universal practice might look like. It's because a country like Japan has been isolated for centuries and is currently rich and powerful, and is therefore able to continue its native practices almost completely undisturbed and with ample resources and funding. There are some other traditions that are kind of comparable to Shinto, like Musok in Korea or Tengrism in Mongolia, but otherwise you'd have to go to tribes in the Americas or Africa or Polynesia to find this kind of fully indigenous spiritual tradition, and in those places there's sadly a lot more of a pressure to assimilate with Christianity or Islam if they haven't been wiped out entirely. So you can't see that difference as starkly as it could be with a place like Japan. So there's a lot of reasons why people are reluctant to use the word religion to describe Shinto, including me. In Japanese history, separating out the indigenous elements of the religion from the ones imported from China and India is a fairly modern phenomenon, in fact. It was only in the Meiji Restoration in the 1800s that Shinto and Buddhist institutions were officially separated by law. And that choice was born from a lot of nationalistic rhetoric and resulted in some pretty unfortunate anti-Buddhist radicalism. Some of the destruction of Buddhist temples and icons was truly hideous and tragic. But I do think that there was a lot of value in isolating what is uniquely Japanese in Shinto, because while it has the flavor and particulars of their particular lands and customs, Shinto is, in my opinion, in fact, something very universal, and this helps us see it in a distilled form. Of course, in order to do this separation, the Japanese had no choice but to frame Shinto as a religion, in the same way that Buddhism is, but that's kind of a misunderstanding and misapplication. Shinto has no founder, no holy texts, no prescribed metaphysical beliefs, and no commandments. Of course, there's norms and there's customs, there's rituals and instructions that are carried on, but it's not a systematic teaching. The word Shinto is made up of two kanji, one for god, or gods, plural, as it should be, and one for path, or way. So Shinto is the way of the gods. All of these things, a lack of a founder, a lack of holy texts, no particular necessary beliefs, are distinct from major organized religions. But, to me, what's most distinct and most ancient about Shinto is that it's highly externally regimented, while it is, for the most part, internally free. Now, what do I mean by that? Let me sketch out an example which really puts it into perspective. And this is moving away from Japan a bit, but it's related, you'll see. In ancient Rome, religion was also an important part of the state and society at large, but belief was rarely a part of it. They don't talk in terms of beliefs, usually. One of the best examples of this is the great orator Cicero. I remember hearing somewhere that Cicero was employed as an augur, which is a kind of diviner who reads into the flight patterns of birds to make predictions about what will happen. But Cicero made it clear that he didn't believe in augury at all. But to the Romans, that didn't matter. You just had to read the patterns. And that's unthinkable almost to, like, a Christian point of view. Like, it's considered necessary, first of all, to believe in order to work, like, be part of the church, be part of a monastery, or be a holy man or whatever. But it's similar in modern Japanese shrines as well. A lot of the young women do part-time jobs as miko or shrine maidens, even if they don't believe in anything spiritual. That's because there's still certain rites and duties that just have to be done for the gods, and their presence helps and functions in the religion, even if they don't believe in it. It's because belief is unnecessary for the spiritual practice to function in ancient Rome and in modern Japan. It's all about the actions and the external regimentation, not the internal ones. And we lose that today to our detriment. The externality of a spiritual tradition should be regimented so that it can unite others in the practice, but the internality of it should be free so that no practitioner can be a heretic, in my opinion. And yet it never becomes superficial or cheapened by this. On the contrary, it makes it even more holy, because everyone can approach it on their own terms. So, I really do think that the kind of animist nature worship we see in Japanese Shinto is the most original, pure, universal form of faith, or spirituality. There's an Indian scholar I remember reading the work of for a class many, many years ago, whose name I forget. I think it might have been Sri Aurobindo or Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan. But the idea was pretty interesting he had. He had studied comparative religion during the British Raj and came to the conclusion that all world religions follow a trend in evolution, and this is his opinion. He said that they begin with what he called a crude polytheism, where believers worship a number of gods, usually based on natural phenomena like rain, sun, fire, and so on. Then they progress from polytheism to a state of henotheism, which is a term which means that they believe in many gods, but they put one central god above others as a kind of leader or most supreme highest god, like a Zeus for the Greeks, or Ra for the Egyptians, or Marduk for the Babylonians, for example. Then, after henotheism, they would progress to an actual monotheism, like the Abrahamic religions, which elevates this ruler or most supreme god to the point where they think that there actually is only one god. Many scholars actually, or some scholars at the time, maybe today too, I'm not sure, actually believe that this is how Judaism evolved, that the central god, Yahweh, was elevated from being just the most supreme, most important god to the only one that exists. And finally, this scholar says that after progressing from polytheism to henotheism to monotheism, the highest form of religion is monism, where they actually believe that not only is there only one god, but that there's only one thing in the universe, and that everything is just a part of that mystical, eternal oneness. And this is what Hinduism teaches, which is why it is, for this guy, the most spiritually advanced religion, only rivaled by the most sublime mystical sects of religions like Christianity and Islam. So this idea sounds nice, and it's seductive, but I'm going to be honest, it's crypto-Hindo-nationalist bullshit masquerading as enlightened universalism. It's wrong, and it's evil. The entire evolution idea ignores, and thus rejects, this entire evolution idea ignores the tradition of Buddhism, for example, which rejects the idea of monism, and the idea of stable, self-subsistent phenomena in general. And therefore, I think this idea is totally inverted. In my opinion, it's the opposite. The most spiritually pure, elegant, and perfect religions or spiritual traditions are the ones which are closest to what comes naturally to us, which is that so-called crude polytheism. The further removed they get from that worship of natural forces and plurality of spirituality, the more removed they get from our innate sense of beauty and sublimity, the holiness of the earth and its inhabitants, and gets bogged down in bullshit. So I reject anything close to monotheism. I think monotheism is a kind of tyranny on thought. Even when it's wearing the camouflage of some universal brotherhood of mankind nonsense like this theory, it's inherently a method of suppression and conquest. I think that biodiversity in species is inherently good in nature, and I think that what we might call a theodiversity in gods is inherently good in spirituality. So I think that Shinto, by one name or another, is basically the religion that everyone has had and is the most appropriate for all mankind. And I call this universal awareness an Ur-Shinto, a primal Shinto, that was spread over the whole earth. It's none other than the materialization of the awe, the reverence, and the love we have for natural forces. And some people call these gods. The Japanese call them kami. It has to be against the entire idea of Shinto to restrict it to a textual catechism of beliefs. All beliefs and traditions have to come down from ancestors in whatever particular part of the world you're in. So a Western anthropological word that comes up when discussing Shinto and also the spiritual practices of tribes in the Americas, Africa, Oceania, places like that, is animism. And I'm skeptical of a lot of these Western anthropological terms to do justice to these concepts, but I think that animism is a pretty good term. It's derived from the Latin anima, the soul or animating principle of any living thing. So this Ur-Shinto, this universal Shinto, is an animism. In its worldview, there's a god, a soul, a spirit, an animating principle in everything we encounter in nature. But what exactly does this look like? And I think that's too great a mystery to really say. The metaphysical picture of it has varied in different societies around the world. Does every individual thing have a spirit living inside of it, or does the spirit kind of watch over it? Is there actually a separate individual spirit for every individual thing, like a different spirit in each individual tree? Or are there slightly more grand-scale spirits that control all objects of a type, like a general god of trees? Is the animating principle a bunch of individual spirits, or is there a spiritual stuff within everything, like the Polynesian concept of mana? Is there one great spirit permeating through everything? Or is all of this just a personification of the subjective human kind of pathos we have towards natural objects? The right attitude, in my opinion, should be, I don't know, but I honor nature and its spiritual blessings regardless. Because the thing about Ur-Shinto is that it's not about metaphysics. Trying to put it into any of these pictures seems to limit the power and auspiciousness of the natural world. Trying to sum up things in these generalized metaphysical pictures always limits them. We have to let any one of these things speak to us and make itself manifest, but never stick to one over any other as the truth. That's why I've never been a fan of the image of nature as a great mother, a Mother Earth. It's too personalized, too simple, and too close to monotheism. Sadly, I imagine a lot of tribes have had to kind of adopt this view because they've been so pressured into a monotheistic picture. But I think we can only do justice to the variety on the earth and all the forms of worship that have grown on it by imagining the spiritual nature of earth as a huge teeming web of as many divinities as there are things, whose presence is active and proactive, yet always solemn and dignified. So, Yugen is a Japanese term, which is very hard to translate, but it's deeply related to all of the above. The probably best translation I've seen is mysterious profundity. And it's when we sense that the universe is something very large and impossible to fully capture. It's when we see the ways of nature and sense something larger and more auspicious that can't be confined into words. It's when we sense that our words pale in comparison to the experience of the ultimate. This profound sense of humility and desire to offer one's logic and reason up to the world in defeat is the essential feeling at the heart of Ur-Shinto. All the metaphysical pictures of the world we sketch pale in comparison to it. And this is something we should welcome. This is what the problem with a lot of modern religions are. We don't want everything to be explained. When something's explained, its beauty is gone. The mystery is a thing of beauty. In John 4:22, Jesus says to the Samaritan woman, "Ye worship ye know not what," and I say, exactly. I would never want to know what I worship, because if I could be known, it wouldn't be worthy of worship anymore. Okay, so let me just say that I know a lot of this sounds kind of out there, but, and I probably have more secular people listening, but, and that's good. It's good to be skeptical of things you don't have empirical evidence for, so you might be a little not fan of all this spiritual talk, but I want to remind you that Urshinto is not a practice that makes metaphysical prescriptions. So, for example, an Abrahamic religion like Christianity might be in conflict with science, because its holy text says that the world is 6,000 years old, or that human beings didn't evolve from earlier primates. But a religion like Urshinto can actually be very compatible with science, because so much of it is external, and not constrained by specific metaphysical claims. So, I could sketch this out by saying, like, what is a sacred space? Is it a place where literal gods live and act in a higher non-material way? Or is it a place that human beings just find particularly beautiful and sublime and want to maintain the way we might designate it? I think, this is an example I think Neil deGrasse Tyson once gave, who I'm not a big fan of, but he said that, yeah, our natural parks are sacred places. That's what they are. They're places we've decided are too sacred for industry and stuff like that. So that could be all that sacred means to us. What are the gods in this case either? Are they supernatural entities that live in things and work through them in a non-material way, or are they just kind of elaborate metaphors and allegories that we use to express our reverence for natural phenomena? Well, in the ideal Urshinto world, all of these things would be acceptable ways to believe, because all of them are functionally identical at the end of the day. That's because what ties the religion together is external, not internal. There's no obligation of certain metaphysical beliefs. And this is important because it means that the spiritual practice can continue to function as markers of continuity in a culture. To put it bluntly, even if only every person only views these spiritual traditions as an elaborate LARP, it can still be one that's deeply fulfilling, fun, and meaningful. Roger Scruton once said that the consolation of imaginary things is by no means imaginary consolation. The best analogy I like to use for it, I think Wittgenstein might have given this one, I know I took it from somewhere, is like leaving flowers on a gravestone. So very few people in the secular world would believe in a scientific sense that flowers left on a gravestone will speak to, like, the soul or ghost of the dead person. But the act still has meaning, if for nothing else than making manifest in a physical way your love and respect for that person. And I believe there's value in viewing the world in some of the more supernatural ways I've sketched out above, insofar as it doesn't contradict the findings of science. But at the end of the day, Urshinto doesn't hinge on beliefs to exist, and that's why it's so adaptable and tenacious. And I think there's even a good argument to be made for this trend among Abrahamic societies. It's pretty informative when you look at which countries have the greatest percentage of Christians in their populations. The absolute greatest ones are all, like, tiny islands, but ones with, like, a really large, diverse enough group of people. So some of the places with highest percentages of Christians are places like Romania, Armenia, Paraguay, Peru, Poland, Greece, Serbia, Georgia, and so on. And notice that none of those are Protestant countries, majority Protestant. Most they're Catholic and Orthodox, for the most part. And I think it's no coincidence that Catholic and Orthodox Christianity have a lot more ritual and kind of externality to their worship. You know, you have to do things like receive the wafer, go into the confessional booth. There's a lot more festivals. There's a lot more. There's, like, art. There's icons. There's stuff like that. There's the incense they swing around. In comparison, majority Protestant nations are really secular for the most part. They secularize much more quickly, even the United States compared to a lot of those places. And that's because they have no Urshinto roots integrated into their religion in the way I think Catholic or Orthodox countries do. And to make it clear, I'm not saying that because it's a bad thing, like, oh, I miss when society was more Christian. I'm glad it's less Christian. I would rather have no religion than Christianity dictating society, because usually when it does, it's repressive. And I know there's non-repressive forms of Abrahamic faiths, but for the most part, in the Protestant countries that have secularized, they've become more free, less obsessed with censorship, less hateful of natural urges like sex, less punishing of enjoyment of sensuality. So, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not yearning for the days when Europe was more Christian. If anything, I'm yearning for the days when it was more pagan. And the saddest thing for me now is that I don't live in Japan anymore and can't adequately practice this kind of spiritual tradition, because there's simply nothing like this left for European people. You could try to recreate it like Varg, but it feels very fake unless you're born into it. So that's why I practice Buddhism instead, because Buddhism is very much a religion. It's something meant to be available to and practiced by everyone. I just wish I had an authentic spiritual tradition to do on top of it. So let me know your thoughts. How does a European descended person recapture this sense of spiritual tradition? I think the closest a European in the modern age ever came to capturing that was, you guessed it, Martin Heidegger. And that's why I like his writing so much. So, yeah. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.